This is the State of Things broadcasting from the Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage in Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. You know, some people are gluttons for punishment. And you're in this room tonight, and you know you are, and I'm going to explain why in just a minute. You know, because there are folks who could walk into a venue just like this, say, and they could throw their names into a hat or a vase, and then they could wait for their turn to get up and tell a story in front of a live audience. No rehearsal, no preparation. You hear your name, boom, you're alone on stage, bearing your soul. And did I mention there are judges? Judges in the audience to grade your performance after you've told them the most heartfelt story you can imagine and that actually happened. Well, those gluttons have made the Monty Story Slam a huge sold-out hit all over the Triangle and here in the Triad. The competitive storytelling event is the brainchild of Jeff Polish. He's bringing the Monty Story Slam back to the Triad stage tonight, but right now we're going to put on a little live version of our own show to test the stage version of the Story Slam. We're going to do that right here, and we have some judges with us for the Story Slam, and they're going to help us out. Let me introduce our judges right now. Preston Lane is here. He's the artistic director of the Triad stage. Katie Southard is the owner of the Green Bean Coffee Shop, and Donna Baldwin Bradbury is a choreographer, performer, and director, as well as a professor at North Carolina, the University of North Carolina, A&T. So let's hear it. All right, so that's the judges. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about the Story Slam, and you're gonna pick some names, but give us an idea what the Story Slam is.
Well, the Monty Story Slam is an offshoot of our normal curated show, The Monty, where I invite storytellers to come. They prepare and they tell 12-minute stories. The Story Slam is different. It's competitive, where 8 storytellers in a given night face off head to head. And there are really 4 rules to the stories that are told. The first rule is that the stories being told are true. The second is that the stories are told without the use of notes. The third rule is that there's a time limit. Okay, the time limit for Story Slam stories is 5 minutes. And at 5 minutes, the competitors will actually hear this sound. That's a hippo sound, right? That's our mascot. I don't have time to go into that right now, but that lets our judges know that they've reached 5 minutes. They do have a 1 minute grace period, at which point they'll hear the hippo sound again, and the judges will deduct some scores. And then finally, the fourth rule for Story Slam stories is that they have something to do with the theme. And every given night has a set theme that people tell stories on. And today's theme for today's show is Home for the Holidays. We're about to go home for the holidays, right?
You're going to hear it. Yeah. So this sounds like a more communal event than the Monty itself, where people kind of prepare a story and get up and tell the audience.
It's actually an amazing dynamic going on that doesn't exist completely at the Monty, because it's the audience coming together to tell stories to the audience. It's very communal. The other thing that makes it so interesting is that nobody, not even the producer of the show, me, knows what's going to happen. Anything can happen at a Story Slam, because some stranger gets up and tells a story. It could be anything. It could be a very poignant story about their family, or it could be a very raunchy story that really nobody in the audience wants to hear. Right?
Okay, so for today...
Right. That's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. Okay, there's a couple of extra rules today. That sounds pretty good. All right, so here we've done. Before the show started, we asked people to put their name in a hat. We didn't have a vet, so we used a vase. It's going to work, and we're going to draw one of the... Are we going to draw all 3 names? Do we do all that? Should we draw all 3 names now?
One at a time, I think.
We'll do one at a time. We're going to draw a name from the hat, or from the vase, and let's do that. Where's our vase? Do we have that?
It's right there.
Jeff. Do the honors. I was looking for a hat. All right, here we go.
Our first storyteller today is Brian Lampkin.
Brian, you come on up here.
Come on up.
I already know something about Brian because I met him before the show, and I know he's from my native Buffalo, New York, so I hope it's a Buffalo story. So as you get comfortable there and gather yourself, I want to talk with... Why don't you... We'll take that mic right there. That'll be the storytelling mic. And that'll be good. And so now the rules are, one more time, how long do we have?
We have 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Between 5 and 6 minutes,
right.
Because, people can have a great 5-minute story in mind, But, you know, with the audience reaction, dramatic pauses, it could turn into a six-minute story. You know, it happens. It happens.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Brian Lamkin.
All right. This will not go 5 minutes, I'm reasonably sure. And it does take place on the outskirts of Buffalo, New York. And it'll start in just before Christmas in 1999, where my nine-year-old nephew, James, is so proud of his brand-new suit he's going to wear to the Christmas pageant at school. And he wants to show his grandfather. He loves his grandfather, and his grandfather's sleeping before school, so James is going to go in and show his suit off to his grandfather, and he flicks on the light and walks in and says, "Grandpa, Grandpa, look at my new suit." And Grandpa says, "James, what are you doing? Turn on the light." And James gets it right away and runs out, you know, freaked out. And that night, my father went blind, right? So then I'm going to jump back, you know, 25 years before that, and we're driving down Niagara Falls Boulevard, the worst road in all of Western New York, you know, busy traffic. And it's late at night, and we're driving home with my father, with my sister in the back seat. And we find out for the first time, my father can only see out of one eye. We never knew this. You know, we're 9 or 10 ourselves at that time. And, you know, we don't believe him. You know, "You're making this up, Dad." And my sister, smart, smart sister, reaches to the front seat and covers his would-be good eye as we're careening down Niagara Falls Boulevard. And we quickly learned, okay, Dad, we believe you. You are blind in one eye. But we were always troubled because he was born in Liverpool, England, and he served in the war. And how does a guy fight in the war with one eye? And he says, "Easy. You know, the doctor says, cover your eye and read the chart." And my dad puts his left hand over his eye and reads the chart. And now the doctor says, "Okay, now the other eye." And my dad takes his right hand and covers the same eye and reads the chart. But it was World War II, and he was 17, and all sorts of rules were broken. And so he fought in the war. So we jump back, you know, to my nephew James and my dad going blind. It was his third stroke. He was in his early 70s now. And, you know, it took his good eye in the night. You know, and as kids, we were always told, you know, "How did this happen, Dad? You know, how did you lose your one eye?" And the classic story, you know, playing with sticks with kids. And it made us, you know, really careful around sticks, right? You know, just, you know, goofing around in Liverpool, England, and a stick got in his eye. But a little while later, in 2000, my wife is cutting my father's hair. You know, he's blind now, and he loved my wife. Oh, God, he loved my wife. My dad's been dead quite a while now. And he loved my wife so much, and she was cutting his hair in this great intimate private moment, right? And for the first time ever, he never told his children, he never told his wife, he tells my wife the real story of what happened to his eye as a kid. And it wasn't sticks. It was his mother. His mother put out his eye with a wooden spoon. Not intentionally, but in a rage. You know, an accidental rage, right? And he never told that story. And I guess my story here today is, are there some stories better left untold? Right? Why does he keep that story? What is the reason? You know, is it shame? You know, he just doesn't want that, you know, shame or embarrassment. I don't know, you know, but I think it's more that he wanted that family violence stopped in time, you know. He wanted that cycle of violence broken, and he broke it by just keeping it to himself. And I wonder what damage and what cost, but I'm grateful to him. And I'll go home at Christmas this year, and I will not tell this story. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Lamkin. So we're going to let our judges now consult and come up with a score for that. Jeff, at this point in the Story Slam, what's your role?
Well, my role is essentially to be a palate cleanser for the audience. So we have no idea what's going to happen next, what kind of story is going to be told next. I need to give the judges some time, about 3 minutes, to confer, and I need to take the audience out of that moment. Okay, it's extremely important. We just had a very emotional story told. This is a perfect example. You're probably feeling it. Okay, so my job is to take you away. So I might come up here. I have various techniques that I've developed over time. But one of the techniques is to come up here and say, "God, that was such a heartfelt and emotional story. Now I can't tell the story about when I lost my virginity. See, and you guys, the producer's like, don't say that. See, the thing is, you guys reacted. I pulled you from that moment. And what's going to happen next, if we had the time, and if it were in the evening, not on radio, is you would give me permission to tell that story. And in a minute, you would forget about the moment you just had, which is real. We honor it, but we got to move on.
And in 2 minutes, we'd be out the door. Because
right, exactly.
I've actually heard the story, and you don't want to know. but there's something else profound about what just happened, that honest, heartfelt story, so well rendered. And I think this is at the heart of the Monty and your understanding of who we are as storytellers. It sounded comical. It was very familiar. We all have some story like the comedy that. And then there's the depth charge. Then the thing explodes. We can do that. That's what we do as people. We're meaning makers.
That is what we do. And what's really interesting about what just happened, the story told up here, is that it was just a guy being vulnerable, talking about something he cares about. You could hear it in his voice, the authenticity, you know, the genuineness, how much he cared about what he was talking about. This was a perfect example of the types of stories that we want to hear. And I don't want to influence the judges by saying that, but it was a good example.
Well, it was indeed, and it also speaks to the value of public space like this, where we can actually get together face to face, flesh to flesh, and tell those stories and feel each other's emotions. So I think this is one of the reasons why a city like Greensboro and Durham and Raleigh and Chapel Hill do the things they do, bring these downtowns back together and bring them back to life so that we can be here. So let's go to the judges now, and before we find out about the judging, I'd like to find out a little bit from each of you. First, Preston Lane, Artistic Director here at the Triad Stage. Welcome to the show, and tell us what's going on. What are we missing tonight if I don't come back?
We are so happy to have the Monty here, and we are gearing up for all the holiday plays, Santaland Diaries and A Christmas Carol. So it's always a busy time right around Thanksgiving for Christmas plays.
Tell us how you rated, how you were able to make a judgment, and what your thoughts were about the story.
Talked about theme and time and sort of an overall sense of what was in the storytelling, and I think we all kind of came to an agreement on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go around the table a little bit. Donna Baldwin Bradby, choreographer, performer, director, and professor at A&T. What are you working on these days?
Hey, Frank. How are you?
It's good to have you back.
We have Black Nativity at A&T that opens in December, and I'm actually choreographed A Christmas Carol here at Triad Stage, and I had a mammogram on Tuesday.
Oh.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's a storytelling event that we'll have to wait for the next show, but thank you for that. At Katie Southard, owner of the Green Bean Coffee Shop. I mean, this is, I just described what goes on at a good coffee shop like yours. People show up, right? And they talk to each other.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the whole point of it. I mean, to me, it's kind of like this magical place that has its own spirit and community, and definitely magic happens, and there's tons of stories to tell, for sure, that come from the Green Bean.
You're coming up on a big anniversary.
Yep, 10 years in April.
10 years for the Green Bean. You probably have something to say about the fact that this parking lot is, the garage is full 10 years ago.
Oh, 10 years ago it was a ghost town. Yeah, it's made a full circle, yeah.
So let's get your thoughts on that story and what you were looking for and how you made a judgment.
Well, actually, Pete and Ann Schroat opened the Green Bean 10 years ago. They're close friends of mine, and I just graduated from college, so I was searching for a job, and I was like, hey, I'll help you guys open this place. That'd be awesome. And the rest is kind of history. I was the manager there for 7 years and bought it 3 years ago.
When you listen to this particular story, Brian's story, how were you able to make a judgment and rate it? What were your thoughts about making a judgment?
My thoughts were he described a wide range of emotion. I really liked that, and it was definitely like a touching, moving story, and he was very brave to stand up and talk about that.
Donna, how about you? Tell us what you thought about it.
He looked a little like my first ex-husband. But anyway, which put him at a -5. But immediately. But I think Brian was brave. It was brilliant. It was definitely poignant. And he told a family secret, yeah, which was amazing to come live and tell a family secret. I love family secrets, Brian. It was beautiful that you shared it. You did an amazing job. I was moved by your story.
Yeah, it's a good thing nobody listens to this show. Otherwise, the secret would be out. You know, I want to ask you and Preston both, as people who deal in the creative arts, who work with words and scripts all the time, the essence of storytelling, the well-wrought play, and yet somebody stands up. All the essence of storytelling, the foundation, was in Brian's story, wasn't it?
Definitely. It was so honest. And the combination of sort of the poignancy and the humor, which were neither of them forced at all, but completely from the heart, were deeply touching and go to, I think, what we're looking for anytime we create theater.
Donna?
And I call it when people get up and they kind of throw up on us. It was great, Brian. It was really, really smooth.
And you encourage that sort of thing, don't you, Jeff?
He does, Jeff does.
I love that. I love that.
It always keeps them coming back. Does it go like this for you most of the time, Jeff, where people just come out of the audience and mostly tell, I mean, because I can imagine there are times when it's not this good.
No, I mean, it's a grab bag of narratives. You get some people who tell you about that one time that something funny happened, which, it's okay, but it's an interesting situation. Brian's story was interesting because it had a scope to it, a breath. It had, you know, emotional range, and there was meaning underneath it. And I love the fact that, and we just talked about it, that he basically said that, you know, I'm telling you this story, a room full of strangers and 30,000 listeners on air, maybe.
45.
But I'm not going to... 45. Oh, okay. but I'm not going to tell this story to my family. You know, he feels safer here than he would with the people that he's closest with, perhaps. I don't know. There's some psychology going on here. And it's very interesting, and it's something that we tap into every night.
Let's go to the judges' tables and get the scores, can we?
Yes. I give Brian a 9.
All right, 9. And is it a total? Do you tally them up, or is it one score from all the judges, or does each judge?
We actually do tally them up, one from each judge. So, yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well,
Katie?
We all agreed on 9, I think.
All agreed on 9.
9's all around.
That sounds great. We're live from the Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage in Greensboro. Jeff Polish of the Monty with me. We're having our very own storytelling contest, the Story Slam. Judges Preston Lane, Artistic Director of the Triad Stage. Katie Southard is the owner of the Green Bean and co-founder of Downtown Alliance GSO. Donna Baldwin Bradby is choreographer, performer, director, and teacher. And our contest will continue after a short break on the state of things. Meanwhile, listen to the music of Mike Garrigan, whose new CD is The Return of Spring, and the CD party tonight in Greensboro. Mike Garrigan, take us out.
She's got a craving for clarity, don't you know? She displays all her sincerity, don't you know? She wants to do this right, slow down, boy. She's turning off the lights, slow down, boy. You're falling in love. You're falling in love too fast. Does he got a secret up his sleeve? I don't know. Will she display all her sincerity? I don't know. She wants to do this right, slow down, boy. She's turning off the lights. Slow down, boy. You fall in love. You fall in love too fast. Call me crazy, but it seems these games have lost their sting. It's never quite like the movies. And all I want is just to hold out for what love may bring. Maybe I'll take the long way home. Wants to do this right. Slow down, boy.
This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Coming to you live from the Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro, Jeff Polish of the Monty Storytelling Project is with me today because we're having our very own Story Slam contest right here on the show. Members of our studio audience at the Upstage Cabaret have volunteered to come up and tell a story. And they're being scored by a panel of judges. Preston Lane of the Triad Stage, Katie Southard is the owner of the Green Bean on Elm Street, and Donna Baldwin Bradby is a choreographer and a professor at North Carolina A&T. So let's get right to the next story, and Jeff has just pulled a name out of the vase. Who is it, Jeff?
Oh my God, it's Rita Stachow. Oh, isn't that your mother?
No.
No,
no. Call my mom. My mom is in the audience with my uncle and my wife.
Actually, the name is Alex Granados.
Yeah, Alex Granados, another familiar name. He really did pull that at random, but I have to tell you that Alex is one of our producers on The State of Things, and it was pulled at random, but here we go, Alex Granados. Alex, actually, we hired Alex at random. This is exactly how he got the job, so this is really perfect. Other end of the mic, Alex. He's new.
Okay. Hello, everybody. My name's Alex Granados. So the story I'm going to tell you about is last year, a few days after Christmas, my girlfriend of about 3 months invited me to Tennessee to meet her parents. So I flew up there late one night and, you know, got in with just a few hours till bedtime. So we had dinner and everything was nice. And I met her whole family. We didn't get a lot of chance to talk or get to know each other or anything like that. So we went to bed. And woke up the next morning, I'm wearing my pajamas and hanging out in the kitchen. They say, let's get in the hot tub. And so, you know, I've probably been awake in their presence for a grand total of 3 hours now. And I find myself in a bathtub with my girlfriend and her mom and her dad, seeing way more skin on all of them than I ever wanted to see. And we're sitting there, and I don't have a whole lot of experience with hot tubs, but there's bubbles in them. There's these little jets that blow bubbles, and I happen to be sitting right on top of one. And so it's really hot, and I have these bubbles just kind of rising up my backside, and it's kind of itchy, and it's kind of tickling, and my bathing suit is filling up with bubbles, and it's actually lifting me off of the bottom of the thing. And so, you know, I'd never met them before. I wanted to make a good impression. You know, I thought this was a woman that, you know, I could really go places with. And so I'm trying my hardest to look like a normal, upstanding young man. So I'm trying to, you know, press my legs down to the ground. I'm holding on to my girlfriend for dear life, and I'm worrying, do they think I'm like, too grabby with her? But I don't want to let go because then I'll float up, and they'll be like, well, that's kind of weird. So anyway, this whole time they're talking to me, and, you know, we're having all the serious getting-to-know-you discussions. They're telling me their life story. I'm distractedly trying to tell them about myself. And so it goes on like that for about an hour, and then we get out, and I get back into my pajamas. And then a few hours later, you know, we're hanging out, and they're like, let's get back in the hot tub, because they really like the hot tub. So we get back in the hot tub. And I try to move over away from the jet, but I think the bubbles are following me because my bathing suit's inflating, I'm itching, I'm uncomfortable, they're talking to me, I don't hear a word they're saying. And then, you know, so that goes on for an hour, very uncomfortable. Get out, get back into my pajamas. The entire time, I was there for about a day, I spent, I wore two different pairs of pajamas and got into my bathing suit twice. And, you know, the next morning we woke up and left. And so the whole next week, my girlfriend keeps on bringing up all of these stories that we talked about while I was in Tennessee, and I don't remember any of them. And she keeps bringing them up, and she's getting increasingly annoyed with me because I seem to have no idea what she's talking about. And finally, I'm like, look, 3 hours into a visit with your parents, I was in a bathtub with them. I had bubbles going up my butt. I was itchy. I was uncomfortable. I was floating, and I didn't hear a word they said. And she said, oh. Well, fair enough. So what do you do when you meet a girl, lovely young lady, who takes you to see her parents and immediately puts you in a giant hot bathtub with them? Well, I asked her to marry me a few weeks ago, and in September we'll be getting married, and we're going back up to Tennessee this Christmas, and I'll be bringing my bathing suit.
Alex Granados, producer at the State of Things. So let me ask you, Jeff, now a story like that, you know, it's heartfelt, but yet there's not the revelation so much in a story.
Right,
like that.
Right. Yeah. And there's room for that. I mean, what we want is we want a complete range of experiences. It's sweet. Life is also dirty. Life is tragic. And it's also filled with just memorable moments. I mean, we want to get it all. It is not uncommon in a given night for us to laugh until we're pounding our fists on the table. And it's not uncommon in that same night to be crying as well. And that's what we want to promote. That's really what this project is about.
Life will no longer be dirty for Alex once he's married, apparently. But I see what you mean. What's the most surprising story that you've heard? Or a story that really kind of upended you, and you don't have to retell the story, but just sitting there one night, just not expecting that.
Well, we had a guy who I should preface this by saying that in the early days of the Story Slam program in Durham, it was hard to get people to volunteer to come up and tell stories. So there were times where I'd sell out a show, 100 plus people would show up. And two names would be in the hat, in the vase. And I needed 10 at the time. We were doing 10 stories. So I would walk around before the show and ask people to tell stories. And there was one particular time where I asked this guy named Frank, different Frank, to tell a story. And, you know, it just didn't seem like he was comfortable with that. And he agreed to do it. And he was sitting there. I was watching him as storyteller after storyteller was getting up there, and he looked so entranced in his own space, you know, not listening to a thing. He gets up there. He's obviously nervous. He is obviously vulnerable. He is very sweet in his delivery. And he won over the audience, not because he was a good performer, but because he was authentic, and he was giving us something that was important to him. It was hilarious. It was heartfelt. And that's really all it takes to tell a great story, is to be real. I mean, that's the most important thing.
Let's see what the judges think. Preston, give us an idea. Tell us what you thought of that story.
I thought the story was very, very funny, and then moved to a sort of great touching moment at the end, and it was, I think, really summed up the kind of hell that is going home for the holidays.
How about you, Donna?
It's nothing like a good holiday hot tub story. I have some too, Alec. We can meet later. Can share some of mine. I thought Alec did a really fine job. I didn't know where the story was going, and that was intriguing. He kind of kept us, holding us out there with the story. I had a great time listening to you, Alec. I really did.
That happens frequently at our staff meetings, so you're not alone, believe me. Katie, how about you?
Yeah, it was a great delivery. It came full circle, and it was hilarious, which I loved.
All right, well, let's do it again. Oh, yeah, and so how do we rate that story? We got a ranking, a number, a score?
We'll all go individually this time.
Yeah. All right. One
I give
time.
It a 10.
Oh, 10.
9.5.
9.
Wow. All right. There we go. Good scores for Alice Granato.
Big scores.
Let's move to our next storyteller. And in we go. Don't be slow. Yep. What's the name?
Carol Casey. Casey?
Carol. Come on.
Cassie.
Carol Cassie is going to tell the story. Ordinarily, what? So you have 10 stories at the Story Slam? Is
we
that
do.
How it goes?
We do eight now, actually, and it's kind of interesting. I mean, we do, as you found out, we do rate on a scale of 1 to 10. Actually, it's changed. It's now on a scale of 6 to 10.
Why is that?
Well, actually, because of something that happened about 2 years ago. We had somebody get up and tell a story about his parents' divorce and a very bitter custody battle. And it was a very non-traditional narrative. But and he painted these pictures of what was going on. And it was incredibly powerful. At the end, we definitely knew about his life. He got a 4 from one of the judges, a 4, and I was so upset because nobody deserves a 4. So at that point, I instituted you get 6 points just by coming up here.
There we go. Great inflation, thanks to Jeff Polish. Carol Cassie, tell where are you from?
I am a native of Greensboro.
Bless you. And you have a story for us.
I do. I have to admit, I thought I was going to be doing this evening if I was lucky enough to be selected. So my story is in some ways still fluid, shall we say. But I have two things I want to start off with. One, my family consisted of 6 people, my father, mother, and my 3 sisters. And if you can mentally imagine a photograph of me when I was 2 years old, wearing a diaper, hanging off the fence in our backyard, crying, ringlets all over the place, and there's a long shadow heading towards me as I hang from the fence, and I find out later, years later, my mother took that picture of me. She said I was trying to escape. With flash forward to maybe 5 years ago, I found a Hallmark card, or a card that was a greeting card, and on the cover it shows 4 or 5 people standing side by side, kind of smiling, and in the background you see this woman scrambling over a fence trying to get away. And I thought, wow, that's great, that is the funniest card. And inside it says, you can always tell who you are at the family gathering. You're the one trying to get away. And I thought, who can I give this card to? And I realized I could never give the card away, that I had to keep it. It was my card. So for most of my life, I did not want to go to family gatherings. As much as I loved my family, when we would all get together, it was a collection of mavericks. And I thought earlier today that maverick has sort of been appropriated in recent years by a particular candidate that ran for office. But I usually think of a maverick as like a horse that runs free, and it may periodically come together with another group of horses, but it really prefers to do its own thing. And in that case, our family was full of mavericks. We loved each other, but when you got all of us in a room together, it was clawing and hooves beating and just like, get me out of here. Partly because we all had our own agenda, and we couldn't find a really good way of finding commonality. So things started to change in 1982. I moved back to Greensboro from California, where I had gotten about as far away from my family as I could, 3,000 miles without going across the ocean. And I realized that, strangely enough, I really missed them. And I kept feeling this pull to come back to Greensboro, and I thought, I must be deranged. There's something in the water. Why do I want to go back there? But I realized I was only seeing my family once a year. And I was noticing how much my father and mother were aging in that 1 year. My father had a drinking problem most of his life. And while I was living in California, he decided he was going to finally get some help. But my family members did not choose to share that with me. And I thought, I didn't even get a chance to participate in the healing process. Well, so I come back, but he was sober. And I thought, okay, this is good. I need to move back. You know, our family's going to be different now. There's a whole new dynamic. After I came back, after 1 month, my dad fell off the wagon and was like, okay, business as usual, back to the old thing. So family gatherings for me were always very fractious and difficult. And those two images that I gave to you really kind of encapsulate the way I felt. But in 1996, my father was hospitalized with various respiratory problems. He was in and out of the hospital 3 times until he finally passed away. And I felt this great loss, because we had gotten very close. He had been sober for several years before his death. And it was just like the chance for our family to finally get reconciled and have our family gatherings and our family holidays full of joy instead of, are we going to call the police now or later? I don't know. was kind of past, but he actually reconciled with my sisters as well. And my mother, I found out later, had secretly kind of worked things out with him for years, but she chose not to share that with us as well. So she maintained this public image. I have nothing to do with the man. I'm going like, you love him. Why don't you just tell us that? So then in 2006, my oldest sister died. And it was very sudden death. She had ruptured dissected aorta, the same thing that, he was an actor. He died from the same thing very suddenly. So it was very traumatic. We were not ready for her to pass. Then my mother developed bladder cancer. She passed away 3 years ago. Thank you. And then 2 months after that, my youngest sister died. That's all by way of saying that my family of six, all of a sudden it was just me and my older sister. So we recently had a conversation about what are we going to do for the holidays? What are we going to do for Thanksgiving? And I'm going like, I don't know, Thanksgiving, that's like this big family holiday and it's just us. Why don't we go to New York? Let's just do something different. Let's have something fun. She goes, no, I want to do something here. And I said, okay. And I said, well, who are we going to have to come? Let's invite our friends to come. And I realized that during those years when my family and I felt separate and I was trying to put distance, fortunately, I had a group of friends that kept me close, and they became my family. And so it's not too difficult to envision having a holiday gathering, which includes my family of friends. So I'm kind of full circle now. I look at those two images of myself, and I realize I did get out, but I came back, and I brought with me my friends and my larger community. So my family has gotten smaller, but it's continued to grow at the same time.
Carol Cassie, thank you so very much. Thank you all for being here. We don't have time to go to our judges panel, so I will let you judge the wonderful story that you heard from Carol Cassie and our other fine guests. And I want to thank Jeff Polish from The Monty for being with us as well. The Monty Story Slam, 8 o'clock tonight at the Triad Stages Upstage Cabaret. Tickets can be purchased online from monty.org. I want to thank Preston Lane, Katie Southard, and Donna Baldwin Bradby as well for being on the program. Thank the Upstage Cabaret, and thank Mike Garrigan for joining us. His new CD is called The Return of Spring, and you're welcome to join him tonight for the release party at the Greensboro School of Creativity, or visit him at MikeGarrigan.com for more information. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasio, and once again, here's Mike Garrigan.
With a tall, blondish teacher with the hair trigger temper, she caught me stealing paper and it's pulling me apart. The nubs from crayon caddies exploding from my sinuses like bullets flying sideways, whistling in the dark. And the alphabet people are coming, and the spaceship and the garden are landing in my backyard. Well, the fast food restaurant marquee is singing happy birthday, and the accusations are true, and I don't know what to do. The matted felt lining of a German import car tames the pretty princess whining, all snotty and scarred. And the alphabet people are coming, the spaceship and the gardener are landing in my backyard.